Hello, it's Misty Nersky, and I'm going to be doing day number, 13? Wait, yes, it's day number 13, water, for my MXTXtober, prompts, where I do a podfic of, one of MXTX's works according to a prompt that I have found from an Instagram page, and I will link it down in the description, in the author's notes. And yeah, so I do a podfic every day, and yeah, they're also cold reads, which means they're a bit more informal. I won't be doing as much editing, and I might be talking in between. And yeah, I've gone back to MXTX, Modazusha, for this one, Sashi Untamed, because I felt like we'd spent too much time apart. Anyway, the fic I have chosen is Overcast by Willow Catkin, and it has kind of to do with water because of the name, Overcast, but also I think there are some watery happenings actually in the story, but spoilers. Anyway, I will go ahead. Summary. In a different occurrence of events, Wei Ying owns a small musical instrument shop, and Long Wong Ji treads along a narrow path, guided by the Lan sect's principles. But when no one is there to reveal the water ghouls hidden under Long Wong Ji's boat, he strays off his written path. Chapter 1. When Long Wong Ji meets him, it's because of a mistake, a small fumble. It's his first time venturing down the mountain on a night hunt on his own, and he forgets to bring a spare set of strings. Purchasing new strings in an unfamiliar village would be inconvenient, and the Lan sect has always crafted and repaired their own instruments. He resolves to be careful, but when he's met with a ferocious band of walking corpses, there's no choice but to face them. A string snaps after the second night, and Long Wong Ji finds himself entering a small instrument shop in the morning. The first thing he notices is the familiar fragrance of wood and pine resin. It's a subtle scent, and Long Wong Ji finds it calming compared to the bustle of the lively street outside. The walls of the shop are adorned with instruments. Erhus, pipas, even a yangqin is tucked into a corner. "Good morning," a cheerful voice calls from the back of the shop. Moments later, a young man appears, smiling pleasantly as he approaches. "I'm Wei Ying. What can I do for you?" Long Wong Ji sets his guqin on the counter and unwraps the cloth covering it. "A new string," he says. "A new string," Wei Ying muses, peering at the guqin closely. He picks it up and lifts it to examine the ends of the strings tied around the phoenix feet on the bottom surface. He runs a careful finger over the smooth lacquer and plucks a string experimentally. Finally, he lifts his head up to frown at Long Wong Ji. His eyes drift over Long Wong Ji curiously. "Are you a beginner?" Long Wong Ji bristles at this slightly, but he doesn't let any of it show on his face. He isn't given a chance to object anyway. "You know, this is a very nice instrument," Wei Ying continues. "You should really take better care of it." He insists kindly, but a hint of chastisement comes through. "Look at this string," he says unhappily, pointing at the fifth string. "Why did it snap in the middle? You obviously used too much pressure when you were practicing, and it snapped." Long Wong Ji exhales a quiet breath, and he says plainly, "Your concern is unnecessary." Wei Ying isn't wrong. Guqin strings are usually replaced before they snap, and in the event that they do, it's frequently where the most pressure is exerted on them, at the bridge. But Long Wong Ji doesn't just use his instrument for music. It's a weapon. Wei Ying breathes in sharply, displeasure plain on his face, but he stops himself and says with false cheer, "Of course. You want a new set or just the one? In case you break the other ones, too." He offers easily. "Just one." He takes a seat in one of the wooden chairs placed under the windows, and the morning sun filters through, warming his back. It doesn't take long for Wei Ying to finish replacing the snapped string with a new one. Wei Ying's dark hair falls over his shoulder as he leans forward over the instrument, and his brow furrows with concentration. Long Wangji watches as he ties a knot the shape of a dragonfly's wings, threading it through the twisted cord at the head of the instrument. He watches as Wei Ying stretches the silk over the cusp of the bridge, across the surface, to wrap it around the phoenix's feet, tuning it until the correct sound is produced. Long Wangji watches and wonders why Wei Ying doesn't see the sword hanging at his hip or the cloud patterns sewn into his clothing. He pays Wei Ying with silver, and the amount barely registers in his mind at all. His guqin is a comforting weight on his back again, but something twists just under his ribcage. The old floorboards creak with every step he takes, and he glances back at Wei Ying just before he reaches the door. His breath catches, or something equally absurd, when Wei Ying smiles at him again. He's too busy trying to quell the undisciplined flutter of his heart that he almost misses Wei Ying's words. "Come again if you break another string." Long Wangji nods, and he wonders if he'll remember the next time he passes through the small village, sheltered far away. He hopes it stays that way. He injures his hand a few months later when a water ghoul attacks him. It had clung to the underside of his boat, taking him by surprise when it had torn cold, sharp claws through the length of his sleeve. He brushes off his brother's concerns and sequesters himself in the quiet of his room, where he tries to pretend he can't remember the feeling of blood, slick and warm, coating his fingers as his grip slipped. He pretends that he can't hear the shattering silence of the waterborne abyss tearing through the dark, putrid waters, or the desperate screams of its victim when he was dragged below its depths. The stagnant air of this enclosed space becomes further stifling the longer he stays. It feels as though he's breathing in small particles of dust, and it accumulates slowly to fill his lungs, drifting inside until it weighs his entire body down. So, Long Wangji leaves. He leaves the cloud recesses just before dawn infuses into the star-filled sky. The well-travelled path he follows branches over and over again, but Long Wangji does not hesitate. He wanders for a few days, feeling lost even when he has a destination. Reader's note, now I'm just imagining Lan Zhan getting like a hammer and just breaking his guqin just so he has an excuse to see Wei Ying again. Anyway, sorry. He arrives in the village early in the morning. The streets have begun to fill with people, and Long Wangji thinks of the mornings in cloud recesses. He thinks of the empty library, the muted fear he sees on the other disciples' faces, and the quiet weight of something resting upon his shoulders. He finds himself standing outside the shop, but it's still early, so he lingers for a bit longer. The sun slowly ambles its way into the sky, bringing feeling back into his numb fingertips. He's taken off guard when the wooden doors swing open behind him. "It's you," a familiar voice says, coloured with the kindness of recognition. Long Wangji turns to see a smile on Wei Ying's face, but there's something like concern that flickers across his expression. "Were you waiting long? Come in," Wei Ying tells him. But Long Wangji doesn't move. There's nothing wrong with his guqin. There's nothing for Wei Ying to fix. It started as a barely coherent thought that slowly unraveled like a spool of thread, a thoughtless whim that he shouldn't have acted on. He wonders suddenly what it was that he was searching so desperately for. But strange foreign thoughts surface unbidden, and Long Wangji turns to leave. Wait, what are you... Wei Ying grasps Long Wangji's forearm tightly, and a searing pain lances through his unhealed wounds. He breathes in sharply and wrenches his arm away, but Wei Ying has already let go. Are you hurt? He demands fiercely, and Long Wangji wonders if it's anger that he sees flickering in Wei Ying's eyes. When Long Wangji doesn't answer, Wei Ying exhales a sigh, and he takes a step forward cautiously. Long Wangji's thoughts flit through his mind erratically, and he thinks for a moment that Wei Ying must think that he's dangerous. He's afraid, isn't he? But Wei Ying gently takes hold of the hem on Long Wangji's sleeve, and he meets Long Wangji's eyes as though to ask for permission. He lifts the sleeve back carefully and winces at the sight he's met with. Long Wangji's poorly wrapped bandages are coming apart, and warm blood has begun to seep into them. Long Wangji retracts his arm slowly, but there are no words that are willing to aid him in remedying the situation. Come inside, Wei Ying says. He'll wonder later if there was something compelling about Wei Ying's gaze, if it was the fatigue that latched to him relentlessly, or if the reason mattered at all. Long Wangji steps over the threshold. The floorboards creak again as they walk across, loud in comparison to the relative silence. Long Wangji unties his guqin from his back and sets it on the counter, loathing the pain it brings to the claw marks on his arm. Can you go sit down? Wei Ying offers, a voice muffled as he disappears into the back of the shop. Long Wangji takes a seat in the same chair as last time, and his breath tastes of the soft scent of wood that whispers through the air. Wei Ying returns with a basin of water, a towel, and a small box. He sets the basin of water on the ground, rests one knee on the floor, and reaches for Long Wangji's arm. Long Wangji breathes, but he's caught cut off by Wei Ying's stern voice. Don't move. He lifts the sleeve back and begins to unwrap the bandages with deft fingers. Damp with blood, the loosened cloth unwinds easily. Wei Ying's hands falter when he sees the extent of the damage. Starting from his elbow, the claw marks, each ragged and angry, reach jagged and angry to the back of his hand. It must be unseemly. He doesn't realize that he's begun to pull his arm closer to his body until Wei Ying rests a gentle hand on his knee. Don't worry, he says softly, keeping his eyes trained on Long Wangji's arm. But then he smiles slyly, glancing up at Long Wangji from under his eyelashes. You'll still look handsome even with a few scars, Wei Ying teases. And he laughs when Long Wangji scoffs lightly and turns his face away. Wei Ying doesn't know anything about him, bar the few words they exchanged more than a month ago. It's inexplicable, tending to a stranger with such kindness. Really? Wei Ying says, wetting the corner of the folded towel in the warm water. With your face, I won't believe that people aren't falling over themselves to look at you, he says, and the vestiges of laughter tag along the edges of his words. Reader's note, that's such a beautiful phrase. Ah. For the amount that Long Wangji doesn't speak, it seems that Wei Ying is intent on filling the silence with his own. Sunlight filters in through the patterned lattices over the windows, and Lan Wangji recalls the hollowed-out windows of the Gusu Lan sect. Sometimes Lan Wangji wonders if the words that have been carved into stone haven't been etched into his bones. He remembers them so well. "All done," Wei Ying says proudly. He picks up the stained towel, twisting it to wring the water out, but he seems to change his mind when he tosses it back into the basin with a light splash. "This first time's free, but if you show up hurt and you don't tell me, I'll start charging you for..." Wei Ying pauses to think before continuing. "I'll charge you for making me feel untrustworthy," he says, affecting a stern tone. He gives Lan Wangji one last glance and tucks the medicine box under one arm before taking the basin away. Lan Wangji runs a finger over the neatly wrapped bandages. It's not like him to dwell on the past, but some things are not easily forgotten. When he closes his eyes, he can still feel the humid fog that had seemed impenetrable even to the fine blade of Bijian. He should have been more careful. The doors swing open when, presumably, another customer walks in. Now, I'm not sure whether this is an address or an interruption, but I'm just going to say it and we will decide together. Wang Daye, Wei Ying greets as he reappears. "Give me a moment. I finished rehairing your bow yesterday." He comes back, bringing an erhu, but I don't know where that came from. Erhu bow in a slim cloth bag. The customer leaves in a hurry after paying, and it makes Lan Wangji wonder if most of Wei Ying's customers are like this, coming and leaving abruptly, or if they're like Lan Wangji. But it's an absurd thought, and Lan Wangji doesn't expect this to happen again. It's shameful enough for only its singular occurrence. He's startled out of his thoughts when Wei Ying drops heavily into the chair next to him. "So, are you going to tell me your name?" Lan Wangji entertains the idea of lying, of maintaining this comfortable anonymity for just a bit longer. But that's not what he wants either. A compromise, then. Lanjian. He leaves later with Wei Ying's stories echoing in his mind. Stories of his past. Stories of people in the village. He leaves with the sound of laughter and the music of a flute memorized. He leaves with his tongue tingling with heat and his throat itching with something unsaid. He leaves with a promise. "Take care," Wei Ying had said as he left. When he returns to Gusu, he's forced away almost immediately. The remnants of the cloud recesses burn beautifully bright in the dark, empty night. It's as though the stars have lost their way, migrating through the sky but lingering at the edge of the world. There's no need for them tonight. Lan Wangji's leg aches with a bone-deep pain when Wen Chao's men force him down, but his body still shakes with fury. How dare they destroy the ancient history that has been meticulously protected by his ancestors? How dare they step on this hallowed ground, carrying no respect in their hearts? How dare they extinguish the lives sheltered here indiscriminately? Morning breaks, but he can still see the smoke in the distance. It clouds the horizon, obscuring the sun, and carrying with it the ashes of his home. He's utterly powerless. The Xuan Wu screams its ire when they trespass upon its cave. It thrashes its long tail, calling forth waves of frigid, muddy water when it narrowly misses Lan Wangji. "They just left us here to die," Jin Zixuan says, spitting the words out as though they are poison. "Enough! How do we get out of here?" Zheng Wanyin demands urgently, voice loud even in the din of the Xuan Wu's tantrum.
There must be an exit under the water, Long Wangji tells them. Maple leaves.
He points with his stolen sword. They find an exit. Long Wangji doesn't make it through. He spends the next few days in a feverish state. The line between reality and dream blurs as he drifts through day and night without knowledge of either. He dreams of the cloud recesses before the fire, beautiful, orderly, and peaceful. He dreams of it after, but it's nothing more than a blank scenery, and Long Wangji isn't privy to the truth his seeks the most. He wakes, shivering, tears stinging in his eyes, and sorrow trapped in his heart. He dreams of Wei Ying's small instruments shop. I see that all the strings are intact, Wei Ying will tease lightly, laughter coaxing the corners of his mouth into a smile. Have you not been practicing?
Absurd,
Long Wangji will say. The patterned sunlight will move across the floorboards, counting down the hours of the day, and Long Wangji will tell him the truth. He'll tell Wei Ying everything. The guqin is a quiet instrument, and the instruments that accompany its music are equally soft-toned and mellow. The flute is vibrant and nothing like the guqin, but perhaps it doesn't need to be. It sounds pleasing nonetheless. He wakes, feeling strong enough to search for the underwater exit. He finds it inaccessible and covered in rubble. It's possible he was too loud or his wound started bleeding again. He wakes the Xuan Wu. Long Wangji feels the killing intent even before he sees the blood-red eye open. Despite having consumed enough human lives to last a millennium, the Xuan Wu still feels hunger. It swallows him whole. Desperate and panicked, he digs his fingers into the slick walls of the Xuan Wu's throat, searching for anything, anything that could possibly save him. His fingers close around a sword hilt, and he holds on without any reservations. It's too late when he feels the resentful energy flooding inside him, clawing its way through his veins like shards of molten glass. The Xuan Wu must feel the surge in resentful energy as well, and it forces him out with a series of convulsions, more willing to lose its prey than meet an untimely end from the resentful energy its victims have left behind. On the sixth day, Zheng Wanyin unexpectedly returns for him. They kill the Xuan Wu together, and Long Wangji tries to forget about the cursed sword. Long Wangji recovers with haste, pushing himself to move forward. He searches for his brother. He doesn't find him, but Long Wangji meets other people, other cultivators whose homes have been destroyed by the Wen sect. He doesn't hear about the Lotus Pier until a month after it happens. Guilt and regret plague him, and he sets his own grief aside to search for Zheng Wanyin. It's by chance that he runs into them a few weeks later. Zheng Wanyin is filled with anger, and he seethes with frustration and hurt. But Zheng Yanli, as soft-spoken as she is, holds him back from anything rash. They lead him to his brother, and Long Wangji has never been more grateful. They return to Gusu. Their originally small rebellion is christened boldly as Sunshot, and Long Wangji follows suit, even when there's someone else he needs to find. Reader's note, I'm really loving this story so far. Not only the language and imagery, but we get a bit more, we get Lanjian, Zhengcheng actually liking each other, actually being cooperative, which is really nice. I like it. He's travelling with a small group of cultivators after a successful attack on the Wen sect's supervisory office in Jingling,
When he gets careless, it's simply too close, and Longwangji leaves the group to search for the small village. After defeating the Xuanwu, it became a faint whisper in his mind, persistent but not tangible enough to be acted on. He convinced himself that Wei Ying would be fine. The Wen sect has no dispute with anyone outside of cultivator sects. Searching for him would only endanger him more. And yet, there's a part of him that's terribly, terribly selfish, that longs for something that does not exist during war. Longwangji arrives early in the morning again, but the streets are empty, and some of the shops have been destroyed. The wood structures, splintered and collapsing, are completely devoid of any signs of life. He sprints down the street, leg muscles straining from the fatigue of travel, but he doesn't dare to slow down. His brittle state of mind crumbles completely when he sees Wei Ying's shop. The doors are open, and the beautiful instruments that had been cared for with the utmost diligence are covered in dust, broken and scattered into pieces on the floorboards. The message is clear. We take what we want. We destroy what we do not need. He falls to his knees in the front of a small building as he tries to quell his rampant emotions, but it feels as though a gaping hole has opened in his chest, and nothing he does can ever fill it. With frantic, trembling hands, he removes the guqin from his back, but even before his fingers touch the strings, he knows that he's not calm enough to play inquiry. His hands shake with an uncontrollable sense of terror, and when he struggles even to untie the cloth around the instrument, he is forced to set it aside in fear of damaging it.
Wei Ying, where are you?
Longwangji's caught off guard when a sword pierces through his back without warning. He gasps for breath and unsheathes his own sword as he staggers forward, but he's kicked down before he gets the chance to protect himself. The inside of his mouth tastes of iron, and the blade in his back feels cold even when his blood coats it. The dull thunk of his guqin being roughly kicked away is heart-wrenching, but Longwangji tears his gaze away from it, only to see Wen Chao sneering down at him.
Well, well, isn't it the great Lan Zhan? What are you doing out here on your own?
Wen Chao drawls as he reaches down to pull out the sword. Pain sears through him, but Longwangji turns the moment Wen Chao pulls out the sword and lunges forward to seize it by the blade. It cuts sharp across his palm, slick with his own blood, but he reverses his grip on it to block another sword slicing through the air towards him, only to cry out in pain when a hand slams onto his back. He's hauled sharply forward by Wen Chao when he realizes what happened. He coughs out a mouthful of blood as the pain in his chest worsens. It feels as though every nerve ending in his body has been lit on fire, and he watches in terror as the core melting hand crushes his golden core. Wen Chao laughs, and his features distort ghastly. Not looking so great now, are you?
You, Longwangji seethes. Why did you destroy this village?
This village? Wen Chao hesitates before smirking nastily.
I've done quite a few good things recently, and I can't really be bothered to remember everything.
Even though the pain clouds his mind, Longwangji wonders if the villagers left before their homes were destroyed. It's a fleeting wisp of false hope, and when Wen Chao throws him into the burial mounds, Longwangji feels the all-consuming hatred of the eternally restful, resentful souls reach out to extinguish that flickering spark. They tear into his skin, thread themselves through his blood, and sever their way into his heart, and he accepts it. There's nothing left for him to lose. But the fire stays lit. Reader's note. Oh my gosh! Long Wong Ji gets thrown to the burial mounds? I love this! Ah, but how is he gonna measure up his Lan, you know, principles against harnessing resentful energy? Is this gonna be... I want him to be well, but I'm also hoping for some turmoil, you know? Anyway, sorry. He travels alone after that. The loss of his Guqin is a painful one, but there's no choice than to obtain a new one. The notes of his Guqin are harsh, but hauntingly beautiful. He can call forth armies of the dead with hardly any thought at all. The resentful energy that he carries in his body is demanding, compelling the dead to obey him, even when his anger is gone. He's powerful, somehow far more than before. He still remembers the despair and bitterness that he'd felt in the burial mounds. It was overwhelming. The need to survive, to act upon that hatred, to kill. But he doesn't feel like that anymore. The feeling of being powerless, of being afraid, of watching as he lost everything. He still remembers the fire, sparks lighting through the air, ashes drifting through the smoke like burning paper money for the recently departed. He'll never feel that again. On some days, it's unbearably lonely. The Wen clan's cultivators fall one after another at his feet, then they rise again. It's terribly cruel, and Long Wong Ji wonders if he is just another walking corpse. Autumn's cold breath rustles through the air, speaking with a voice that whispers with the falling leaves, telling of the winter's procession. How is it possible to live when you are already dead? He doesn't know how to answer. Long Wong Ji keeps the forehead ribbon. He knows he's not worthy of it, but nevertheless, he isn't able to part with it. There's still a part of him that wonders, that longs to return home. Fate takes pity on him. He meets his brother again, even when Long Wong Ji's footsteps are tinged with blood, tainting the earth with the impurity of demonic cultivation. It's still dark, and the remnants of one of the Wen sect's settlements is still wreathed in otherworldly flames in the distance, when Long Wong Ji hears the familiar notes of a Xiao. His brother is playing inquiry. A futile effort. Long Wong Ji knows the corpses he leaves behind are not suited for inquiry. They've been stripped of their desires, forced to serve an unwilling master. Any semblance of cognizant thought would have been lost. It's only when he hears his own name in the notes that he realizes who his brother is searching for. Guilt throbs painfully in his chest, but he doesn't dare move. Would it ease his brother's pain to see him this way? The still lake water pools around his fingers as he stares at the forehead ribbon. The pristine white silk has been stained with blood, but it never stays for long. It always washes clean. But it's too wet now, and he hangs it on a tree branch to dry. He listens to the Xiao's melancholy voice, and he waits. His brother looks well. Concern darkens his serene features and hastens his footfalls, but he looks the same as before. Wong Ji, he says softly, and a faint smile graces his face. The forehead ribbon has long since dried, and its imperceptible weight on his forehead somehow feels like nothing more than a mockery. He's never been able to hide from his brother.
Xiongjiang, he breathes as he falls to his feet. The cold morning air freezes as it fills his lungs, and frost lines his airway. There's nothing for him to say.
Wang Ji, his brother says kindly, do you know what they say of you? And, inexplicably, he kneels as well. They say there is a ghost, dressed in white, that summons the dead with the notes of a guqin. He pauses, and Long Wang Ji finally looks up into his brother's eyes. He's crying. When he speaks again, it's with a voice as delicate and brittle as the first snowfall. What happened to you? The sun rises slowly, and it gradually warms the ground, dispelling the morning mist. His brother has always been patient, calm in the way that the sun can always be trusted to set. It's too kind.
Xiongjiang, Long Wang Ji says finally, I can no longer play inquiry.
His brother's intake of breath is sharper than usual, and it wavers with something like grief.
You wish to find someone?
He asks gently.
Someone important, Long Wang Ji tells him. His name is Wei Ying.
I see, his brother says quietly. I will ask the spirits for you, he says regretfully. Not here, though, they both know. The spirits here will not answer. He stands finally, but Long Wang Ji does not rise with him. Wang Ji, it is never late to turn back. He turns to gaze at the empty lake behind them, and Long Wang Ji wonders if he can see through the clear water, straight to the murky bottom. Nothing will grow in such a lake. Be careful, his brother says, and it reminds Long Wang Ji of when he was younger, when his brother was never far away, always speaking in a gentle voice, Wang Ji, hold your sword steady, and Wang Ji, tie your hair like this. He stays at the lake for a long time, feeling the moisture from the soil seep into his robes, into his skin. The sun sets quietly, colouring the orange sky with purple and blue, and respectfully yielding the night sky for the stars. Winter in Gusu was always cold, Long Wang Ji remembers. Snow would collect on the wooden frame of the windowsill, white and fragile before it melted from the heat of his lantern. The persimmon trees would bend heavily with ripe fruit, and the lakes and rivers would freeze with an opaque, dark ice. He doesn't remember winter being this quiet. Standing in the slowly drifting snowflakes, Long Wang Ji watches as the scenery around him fills with white. It is never too late to turn back. And he wonders if those words are true. It's quiet, and his thoughts surface unbidden, reminding him as he listens to the snowfall.
Lan Jian,
Wei Ying says suddenly, you travel a lot, don't you? It's a vague question. No, he says, and unexpectedly, Wei Ying frowns at him doubtfully. Really? Wei Ying says, stretching the end of the word like soft candy. You're not from here, though, right? Long Wang Ji watches as Wei Ying twirls a brush around with his fingers. There's always an unrestrained energy to him. He nods wordlessly when he notices Wei Ying's expectant expression. He's surprised when Wei Ying laughs suddenly. It's so hard to tell what you're thinking, he says breathlessly. He leans forward and rests his head on the table, sighing softly before continuing. I want to travel someday.
Someday,
Long Wong Ji repeats. For someone who seems so decisive, Wei Ying's words are strangely limiting.
Yeah, Wei Ying sits up suddenly. There's so much that I haven't seen before. I want to go see the ocean. I want to climb a mountain.
He slaps a hand noisily on the table as he leans forward again.
Lan Jian, have you seen snow before?
Lan Wangji nods again. Gusu sees snow every year, and he's never considered it to be a commodity.
I bet it's really beautiful,
Wei Ying says wistfully. He sighs dramatically and pillows his head on his arms so that he's looking up at Lan Wangji.
Want to come with me?
Lan Wangji stares at Wei Ying's hopeful expression and wonders how long Wei Ying has owned this shop, working here by himself.
Go by yourself, he says finally.
There's something that's keeping Wei Ying here, tied to this instrument shop in this small village.
If you want to go, then go, he says.
Fine, Wei Ying says, affecting a petulant expression. But then he smirks. Then, Lan Jian, maybe you can watch the shop for me. And he laughs again, clear like chimes on a windy day. He wonders where Wei Ying is now, if he's seeing the same snow that Lan Wangji is. He directs his gaze upwards at the dark tree branches, bare and showing starkly against the light-coloured sky, like thin fissures and cracks, and he wonders if he's allowed to turn back when he's already strayed so far. His hands are cold, cold enough that the snow doesn't melt in his palm. As he leaves the snow-covered maple trees behind, he wonders how it would feel now if he had answered differently. The forehead ribbon, folded neatly inside his clothing, feels heavy against his chest, like a constant reminder. But it's too late. Mount Mushi looms in the distance. In the distance, and Lan Wangji's footsteps do not dare to falter. The Stygian tiger amulet awakens, scorching with unfilled desires, diffusing resentful energy through the mist of blood that coats the air, and Lan Wangji watches as it calls the dead from their half-filled graves. It hangs at his waist like a living, beating heart, alive as an insult to natural law. His eyes sting with tears from smoke and dust, but his fingers do not rest on the strings of his guqin. The siege of Nightless City lasts 10 days. The Wen clan falls from its high seat of power. The Sunshot campaign comes to an end. Lan Wangji leaves. He leaves before the blood has settled into the tainted soil, before the clouds fulfill their promise of rain, before anyone can stop him. He destroys the Stygian tiger amulet, but the fallout is costly. The resentful energy rages, and it tears vengefully through him like rusted blades, shearing with ragged, sharp edges, delving into his heart to search for refuge, until it finally shatters. It's quiet again. And he hates that it feels as though he's lost something irreplaceable, something he might not have ever held in the first place. The sense of numbness that clouds his mind is a blessing, and he spends his days wondering, searching for nothing, but longing for it all the same. The guqin becomes a burden. In a frantic moment of anger, he almost loses it to fire. But it wasn't the guqin that took the lives of many. It was him. It slowly comes back to him like smoke collecting in an enclosed space, unnoticed and deadly, until it suffocates everything alive. Even so, Lan Wangji feels empty inside, hollow in a way that he wouldn't have expected to be painful. It hurts with every step he takes, with every morning he sees, with every breath he takes. But he doesn't deserve to forget. Spring comes with rain, and Lan Wangji watches as the dead leaves left behind by autumn drift away with the melted snowfall. Time seems to go on without him, and he wonders if he's allowed to move forward from this moment. It's something of an afterthought, a wistful one that barely holds with its fragile scaffolding, but he wonders all the same. It won't fade away. He wakes softly, and the first thing he notices is the soft fragrance of incense. Warm sunlight filters through the windows, and birds chirp excitedly outside. It's his room in the cloud recesses. How are you feeling? Lan Wangji opens his eyes, blinking to adjust to the brightness. He's not surprised to see his brother sitting next to him. He sits up quickly, but a gentle hand is placed on his shoulder. Your body hasn't recovered yet, his brother says quietly. When we found you at the foot of the mountain, you were very ill. Lan Wangji breathes in the familiar air as he takes in his surroundings desperately. It looks the same as it did before it was destroyed, but it's been too long. The sense of home and belonging is excruciating, and he misses it with every fibre of his being, even when he knows that it's something he should not have. I am not deserving of... He stops abruptly when he sees the sadness in his brother's face. Wangji, you were forced onto the path you were on. He pauses as he sighs softly. When he speaks again, he sounds almost weary, yet somehow unfailingly kind. And we are all guilty in war. There's something different about his gaze, and Lan Wangji is reminded of the clear lake they had spoken at last. It had been beautiful, yet empty and devoid of life. He wonders what his brother had seen in the still water. The person you were searching for, his brother says, I found him a month ago. He's safe. Lan Wangji breathes in sharply, and the sudden flood of relief leaves him feeling lightheaded with an unidentifiable emotion. Even so, he hesitates. Xiongjiang, do I deserve? Am I allowed such happiness? His brother smiles kindly. With a sustained sort of patience, he speaks with the calmness of his namesake. Yes. He'll ask later, where is he? Search for him, his brother will tell him. So he does. Rain comes slowly. It starts as a whisper and grows until the sound disappears entirely. It carries with it a sweet but earthy scent that ushers it its arrival and lingers after its departure. It clings to his hair, to his clothing, to the air that he breathes. It's not unpleasant, but Lan Wangji takes shelter under the thatched roof of an abandoned tea stand when he comes across it. The roof overlooks an old table and two benches, all worn with the passage of time and on the brink of collapse. Uncertain of whether they will hold his weight, Lan Wangji shifts them aside with a silent apology when the rain soaks into them immediately, colouring their surfaces into a darker shade. The soft pitter-patter of rain is abruptly interspersed by loud splashes, and Lan Wangji turns to see someone running with an umbrella towards his borrowed shelter. The running person comes to a sudden halt beside Lan Wangji, splashing him with muddy water. Lan Wangji feels a spike of irritation pass through him, before it dissipates, and he wonders briefly why the man was running so urgently.
Ah, sorry about the water,
a voice says beside him. There's something about it that sounds almost familiar, and Long Wong Ji turns to glance at him curiously. His breath catches when the man pushes his wet fair hair out of his face. It's Wei Ying.
It just started raining so suddenly. I was worried my instrument...
Wei Ying stops talking when he looks up and his eyes widen with surprise.
Lan Zhan?
He says softly. Long Wong Ji nods, and it feels as though something inside him has crumbled away, something old and dark, as he tries to calm the strange feeling that wells up behind his ribcage.
Wei Ying, I...
Wei Ying throws himself forward, and he holds onto Long Wong Ji tightly, digging his chin into Long Wong Ji's shoulder.
I didn't think I would ever see you again, he whispers fiercely.
Wei Ying is warm. He's warm even when the cold mist of the rain seeps into their clothes, even when tears fall on his shoulder. Long Wong Ji brings his arms up around him hesitantly, but Wei Ying suddenly leans back.
Do you know how worried I was? He demands angrily. Your Guqin was there, and there was blood, and I didn't know where you were.
It takes him a moment to realize what Wei Ying is speaking of. After he climbed out of the burial mounds, he had assumed his Guqin had been destroyed. He never thought that Wei Ying would return and find it. Words elude him, and he stares in disbelief at the large bundle tied behind Wei Ying's back. It's his Guqin. Wei Ying sighs, and it's nothing more than a light puff of air.
I'm sorry I wasn't there either. You were looking for me, right?
Long Wong Ji nods, and Wei Ying exhales a laugh. It's familiar, and it slips right into Long Wong Ji's heart, never to leave again.
This entire time, you were also searching for me?
End of chapter 1. Author's notes. Thanks for reading. Comments are always appreciated. So I started this as a really short, hopefully fluffy 300-word fic about Wei Wuxian being confused as to why Lang Wangji kept coming into his shop with broken strings, and then it didn't quite work out. And then this crazy idea came to me and I ended up finishing it all at once. It's kind of an important accomplishment for me, because I tend to just write around 1,000 words and then lose focus, and I haven't finished an actual fic longer than that yet. So this is the first one, and I'm really glad I was able to prove to myself that I can write endings. As far as this fic goes, I'm aware that there's a lot about Wei Ying that hasn't been explained. I'm not really sure if I want to write more now, but there's a chance that I might feel the need to add an epilogue or something to it. Spoiler alert, there is an epilogue. And come visit them on Tumblr, and appreciate if you come say hi, or you can reblog this fic, but no pressure really. And also they're talking about that the second season of the Donghua released. Anyway, there is a second chapter, and I'm just going to read it. I think it's quite short. I'm just going to read it all in one, and then I'll give my thoughts at the end.
Chapter 2. Epilogue. Long Wong Ji turns the potatoes over carefully, looking for blemishes as he adds a few to his basket. He's not sure why Wei Ying likes to send him to pick out vegetables, but he suspects it's because the vendors give in more easily when he asks them to lower the prices. This vendor's carrots look very strange with their unusually branched bodies. They look almost as though they have legs, and Long Wong Ji deliberates on whether to buy them. Wei Ying said that he wanted to eat carrots, but these ones are particularly terrifying. He's never picked out carrots before. Perhaps it would be better to ask someone.
These, Long Wong Ji gestures to the carrots. How do they taste?
The vendor winces. Sir,
These carrots might look ugly, but I can guarantee they taste perfectly normal. He leans in closer to whisper. I'll even give you a discount for them. Long Wong Ji nods, satisfied now that he has an expert's opinion as well as a discount, and picks out three. He pays the vendor and turns to leave when he feels something touch his leg. He turns curiously, and he's surprised to see a child hugging his leg. Long Wong Ji stares in slight apprehension, and he's about to inquire on the child's parents when the young boy starts to cry. Before he can even react, a small crowd gathers around him.
What's going on here? Was he scolded by his dad?
No, I... Long Wong Ji looks down desperately, but the child starts to cry even harder, rocking back and forth anxiously as he tugs on Long Wong Ji's leg.
See? He's definitely the dad, one of the passers-by states boldly, but he's not even bothering to comfort the kid.
It must be your first time being a father. You'll get better, don't worry. Long Wong Ji tries to calm down as he resigns himself to this temporary role. The crowd eventually disperses as Long Wong Ji nods, vaguely agreeing to take care of the child.
Readers note, this is only making me think that Wei Ying sent him out to get vegetables and he's found a little radish. That's so cute. I don't know if that was intentional, but that's what it made me think of.
The boy is still sniffling sadly, and Long Wong Ji looks around before spotting a stand lined with colourful toys.
Those toys, he says hesitantly. Which one do you want?
The child's name, Long Wong Ji discerns from words spoken between bites of roasted sweet potato, is Ayuan. He doesn't know where his parents are, and he likes butterflies more than dragonflies. Long Wong Ji leads Ayuan to sit on the stone steps leading to some clothing shop, intending to wait for Ayuan's parents to appear. It's a quiet affair, until Ayuan finishes eating his sweet potato and hands Long Wong Ji one of his new butterfly toys.
Gaga, Ayuan smiles brightly. Play with me.
He looks up at Long Wong Ji with wide, expectant eyes. But as Long Wong Ji hesitates, the corners of Ayuan's mouth start turning down ever so slightly. Long Wong Ji takes the butterfly.
What should I do?
Wei Ying finds them about some time later, sitting on the stone steps, each holding a delicately crafted butterfly.
Lan Jian, he calls as he runs up to them. What took you so long?
Long Wong Ji tells him, and Wei Ying sits down on Ayuan's other side to wait patiently with them, laughing with Ayuan at the carrots Long Wong Ji picked out.
Doesn't this one look like it has an arm?
Wei Ying remarks, picking up a carrot that has three sections. Ayuan nods enthusiastically, and an amusing game involving paper butterflies and misshapen carrots is devised. It doesn't take long after that for Ayuan's parents to find them. Relieved and grateful as they are, they promise to visit again in the future when they aren't in a hurry to travel. He's taken by surprise when Ayuan runs up to him to give him a hug, and it's almost a little disappointing to see him leave.
Come on, Wei Ying says finally. Let's go home.
As they walk back, Wei Ying complains about Long Wong Ji's shopping skills, telling him that he could have asked for an even lower price for the carrots. His steps slow to a stop, and Long Wong Ji does the same.
Wei Ying?
The setting sun casts a warm glow on the village, and it feels as though the flow of time has become nothing if not indescribably abstract, something illusory and otherworldly in the face of something so motionless. But Long Wong Ji doesn't mind it. His uncertainty has long since crumbled away. Wei Ying exhales a laugh as he turns back to face Long Wong Ji. The brilliant light renders his features almost indiscernible until Long Wong Ji steps forward to stand by his side.
I'm just glad we met again.
Have you decided? Long Wong Ji says after a moment, where to go?
Wei Ying smiles.
I have, but I'm not telling.
He leans forward until they're close enough that Long Wong Ji can feel the warmth of his breaths.
You'll just have to trust me.
And Long Wong Ji will. They'll go together. Always.
End of story.
Author's notes. Hi again. I want to thank everyone who's read this so far, and anyone who reads my writing in general. Your support, no matter what form it takes, hits, kudos, comments, likes, reblogs, means so much to me, and I'll never be able to express how much it motivates me to write. Thank you for everything, and feedback is always appreciated. P.S. I have, like, a ton to say about this fic, but it would get too long, so I'll just say one thing about this epilogue. The last few lines were sort of inspired by a song I was listening to. It's in Chinese characters, but you should definitely go look it up. There are two lines that say something like, if the road leads to an unknown place, will you go with me? And they have linked the song, if anyone wants to listen. And PPS, Long Wong Ji's line, have you decided where to go, is me stealing from the end of The Untamed, and also throwing cannon off a cliff. And you can contact them on Tumblr if you want to message them. Reader's note. Oh my gosh, that was such a brilliant story. I loved the descriptions, the metaphors. It was so emotive with Long Wong Ji. I think it was really interesting to kind of explore the different reactions that, you know, Wei Ying in canon, and who kind of shrugs everything off, and Long Wong Ji sharing the same thing and finding an excuse to go back to Wei Ying. Oh, I'm kind of sad that they won't get Ai Yuan in this, but hopefully they'll get to see him again, and maybe they'll get kids in the future. Oh, but yeah, that last line when he's like, you know, I will follow you no matter where we go. Like, it doesn't matter what we do, we're always going to be together. Which is such a beautiful sentiment, even from like original material. But yeah, I think this is a beautiful story. Though I will say, I didn't want to say anything at the moment because it really, I didn't want to disrupt the mood, but there was a point in chapter one where Long Wong Ji like falls to his knees, and literally all I could think about is that like meme where it's like falling to my knees in Walmart. Like that is Long Wong Ji. That's him. He's right there. Anyway, I'm sure that's not that. It was very moving and emotive. I'm very sorry to the author. But yeah, so this was for MXTXtober day number 13, and this was for the prompt water, which I kind of felt. I mean, they met again when it was raining. Like, it all brought them together, and also he fell when the water goes, and I think that's why they originally met. So everything, their meetings, is affected by water, which is kind of cool. I didn't even think it would have that much meaning in the first place. But yes, anyway, if you enjoyed, please go back to the original fic and give kudos / comments and tell them how wonderful the story is. And yes, thank you to Willow Katkin for giving blanket permission to podfic their works. Also, just a slight, I don't know, I just feel like I need to say this. I have tweaked with my mic settings quite a bit. I've literally never put anything on my mic, and now I have like a whole audio setup. So
I mean, I guess you could tell me if you prefer it or not. I think it sounds better because there's less background noise. But if there's some issue or whatever, then let me know. But just, I gotta tell you, I'm a new person. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. And I will see you all tomorrow for my next prompt.